Welcome back, everyone, to the Fantasy Crossover Podcast. I am your host, Danny Duarte, joined by my co-host, Brian Acevedo. And today, guys, we have the last episode of Fantasy Basketball for 2022, rather the 2021 season. And very quickly, guys, we are looking at just what to discuss in terms of fantasy-relevant topics and decided that we weren't going to do much of a discussion, if at all, given the fact that the top transaction adds and drops right now are fluctuating way too much. Right now, as you guys are aware, on Sunday, every team is playing. And because of that, we see a lot of players going in and out of the lineup. So it's really switching up the top adds and drops. Our advice to you guys, if you are in a championship weekend scenario, is to just monitor each player's status leading up into the games. Just again, certain players are going to be playing, others may be sat last minute. It's very hard to predict, but that's the only advice we can really give you guys in terms of fantasy. Pivoting off of that, we're going to discuss the play-in games. That's going to happen early on next week, given how the teams finalize in the rankings, because there's still some seedings to be determined with the last game being played. And then we are going to have a discussion quickly on who we think is going to be MVP. This MVP race is probably the closest it's been in a couple years. We have a solid case for five top candidates, in my opinion, and I think Brian can agree to that. So we're just going to give you guys our thoughts on it. And ultimately, there is no wrong answer, but we just want to give our takes. So without further ado, we're going to quickly jump into the play-in tournament. Brian, do you want to quickly just discuss the schedule and like what your thoughts are going to be on who gets what ranking and seeding in general?
Yeah, guys. So we'll lead off with the Western Conference, since there does seem to be a little bit more clarity at the time of this recording. So the Clippers and Timberwolves are locked in. Timberwolves right now are going in as the 7 seed, so they're going to host the Clippers. And then Pelican Spurs will be the 9-10 matchup in the West. Personally, Dan, just as far as my predictions for it, I'm taking the Clippers in the 7-8 game. For those of you guys who have been following us, you probably could have predicted that. In my opinion, PG-13 is the best player in this game. And to me, the combination of him and Ty Lue being on the sidelines with that veteran championship experience, I also like their team's playoff experience as a whole compared to the Timberwolves, who are obviously a little bit younger. Ultimately, though, I do think the Wolves will win their matchup against the Pelicans or the Spurs. Personally, I think it'll end up being the Pelicans against the Timberwolves in a pretty competitive game with the Timberwolves coming out. Dan, am I the only one who kind of feels like the Spurs actually kind of stumbled into the play-in? I think everyone kind of assumed the Lakers would sort of figure things out, even though things looked pretty gruesome there at the end, at least enough to crawl in. So it's kind of surprising to me that the Spurs and the Pelicans are actually the teams that got in. Obviously, as much as I respect DeJounte Murray's game, I just don't think the Spurs have the pieces to contend with the Pelicans right now. And then speaking of respect, I got to give some love to them. CJ McCollum, Brandon Ingram, and the rest of this feisty Pelicans team, they've really turned it around since the trade deadline. Let's not forget, guys, that they started the season 3-16 and managed to climb their way all the way back to a play-in spot. I mean, that's the kind of success story I think the NBA loves to see. I think they should beat the Spurs and obviously, like I said, lose in a pretty competitive game to the Timberwolves. Ultimately, like I mentioned, Clippers take the 7 seed. They're going to play, in my opinion, Ja and the Grizzlies, who are the 2 seed in the West. And then obviously with the Wolves being the 8 seed, they would have to go against the Phoenix Suns, who are coming into the playoffs as a pretty odds-on favorite. Should be fun matchups, though, all in all this week, Dan.
My prediction on the Western Conference is a little bit different than yours. For the 7-8 seed matchup, I actually have the Timberwolves winning based on one reason and one reason only. I am predicting a huge game either out of Anthony Edwards or Karl Anthony Towns. I just think that one of these guys is going to prove that the Timberwolves belong in this discussion of teams that deserve to be making the playoffs, and they'll ultimately beat the Clippers. That having been said, though, I do think that the Clippers will best the team out of the 9th and 10th seed. I agree with you. I think that the San Antonio Spurs, more so, they made it in because the Lakers failed rather than them succeeding, as much as I don't want to take credit away from the Spurs season. So I just think that the Pelicans, with the powerhouse of Brandon Ingram, CJ McCollum, Jonas Valanciunas, and others such as Herb Jones, are ultimately going to be too much for the Spurs, but the Pelicans will lose to the Clippers. I also just have a good feeling about like the matchup of the Clippers versus the Phoenix Suns. I think that if there's any team that can take down the Phoenix Suns without one seed, it is the Clippers. I don't think that the Timberwolves could give them a run for their money. I think the Clippers can, which is just saying a lot. Like in a 7-game series, I could see them taking the series to 6 or 7 games, whereas Minnesota should probably be a cakewalk for the Grizzlies in the second 7 matchup.
You know, Dan, it's funny. Really quick, I wanted to touch on the Pelicans because I know you were talking about them, and then I do want to get into this Clippers series potentially with the Suns. Is there any hope at all that Zion Williamson returns? Let's say the Pelicans beat the Spurs, and then I think that leads to a Friday game against whoever the 7-8 seed is. Do you see any chance that the Pelicans bring back Zion for one of these play-in games?
I don't, mainly because, a plethora of reasons. The first reason being, we don't have enough evidence that Zion could just jump into the lineup and mesh with his teammates. I mean, from my understanding, there's been very little discussion around this, but has he been practicing with the squad running 5-on-5s? Is he caught up to date with the playbook? Like, we don't know these things. And without continuity, I would struggle to put a player of Zion's caliber into the lineup and expect the team to just pick it up and go right away. That's the first point. And then the second point is, I am convinced that David Griffin would rather hold on to Zion for next year and kind of start with a clean slate, because expectations are like they're tampered for this year, but next year their expectations are going to be make a deep playoff run. So I expect David Griffin to hold off on him now and then prepare for next year, because at this point, like, no one's talking about it, but David Griffin's playing or he's performing for his job. He's on thin ice with the Pelicans organization. We know Zion doesn't have a good relationship with him, even though he's done great. Like, at the end of the day, these people expect results, and he's already on his, I believe, third coach since picking up the role as a GM for the Pelicans. So at this point, it's not a coaching issue, it's a him issue. So again, these are all just factors as to why I think Zion's not going to play.
I get it. I actually was reading up one of the reports. I think one of his uncles went on radio and said that, you know, pretty much Zion's ready to go and we're just waiting on the go ahead from the Pelicans. So I think that'll definitely lead to some potentially more drama in the summertime over there in New Orleans, because I think Zion sees like, hey, they're starting to build a little bit of a culture. They've turned it around. Maybe I can come in and kind of make a quick impact here. So it's interesting to see. And it's true, though. It's been so secretive over there with New Orleans and what's been going on with Zion's injury situation that it would just be fascinating to see. But, you know, we'll see what ends up happening. All in all, though, Dan, when it comes to the Suns and the Clippers, I think you brought up a good point. The Clippers do kind of have that veteran, that savvy to potentially knock down to the one seed. But I would be really surprised to see Phoenix not make it out of the first round. They've looked so dominant all season long, but you never know what could happen. It's still a 7-game series. I think with Kawhi Leonard, this is a different series, but it does not sound like that's going to happen. So if that's the case, I really could not see the Clippers beating either Memphis or Phoenix. I think they just have a little too much firepower without Kawhi there.
I think that ultimately the Clippers, out of all the teams in the bottom half of the Western Conference, they are the team that I give the most chance and like the most opportunity to give the Suns some trouble. Now, am I saying that they're going to win? Probably not. But I'm saying they could take them a 6 or 7 games deep versus a Timberwolves team, or I don't remember off the top of my head who the 6th seed is. I just don't see them. I think it's the Nuggets. I don't see them competing as hard as the Clippers is all.
Yeah, and that's totally fair. And then, guys, to transition into the Eastern Conference, obviously the East this year has definitely stepped up. The depth and the quality of teams is definitely better than it has been in prior years. And obviously, as we see in the play-in with the Brooklyn Nets being obviously the most surprising team, they're a team that a lot of us had as title favorites, and now they are scratching for their lives in the play-in tournament. Definitely good news for the NBA and probably their TV ratings this week for sure. I do think that the current standings are going to end up holding up. Obviously, right now we have the Nets at 7, the Cavs at 8, the Hawks at 9 and the Hornets at 10. So I do think that's going to hold. From there, to me, it's going to be interesting to see whoever wins Nets Cavs is going to have to go up against potentially Milwaukee in the first round, if I'm not mistaken, because they're going to be the 7 seed. And then whoever wins the next game will be the 8 seed, and they'll play against Miami. Dan, my question to you is, would the Brooklyn Nets be crazy enough to maybe take it easy against Cleveland and try to go all in against either Atlanta or Charlotte? Maybe they do think Miami is a better first round matchup for them than Milwaukee, obviously. Miami did win 3 out of the 4 games during their season series this year, but Brooklyn did win by 15 when both KD and Kyrie played. Before I give the rest of my takes, I just kind of want to get your thoughts on Brooklyn and that potential strategy.
So I hate to be kind of a hater with what I'm about to say, but it's the truth. I don't think that they would do that out of strategy if it were to happen. I just think it would happen naturally. Mm-hmm. The Brooklyn Nets have not given us any reason to believe that on a single game basis, they can either win or lose by strategy. It's either going to happen or it's not. In my opinion, this team has been very poorly coached throughout the entire year. And because of the fluctuations in and out of the lineups with players, it's just hard to predict like what they're going to be. But all I can say is, given their rankings right now and given their seeding with the games that they've played, we know that they're wildly inconsistent. The only consistent part about the Brooklyn Nets is KD, you know, averaging the points he's averaging for the time being. So I think that they would slip into that 8th seed solely by natural cause, not by intentional strategy. That having been said, though, I still like them to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers. I agree with you. I think that the standings are going to hold true going into the play-in tournament. But I like their odds of beating the Cavs and sliding into that 7th seed, which will be, I mean, I can agree with everyone else. I think that's a much more competitive series than the Heat Nets in terms of anticipation and in terms of kind of star powers mashing up. I think that the Nets are up for the challenge. I think KD wants to try to prove that they should have won last year and the Nets should belong there. So I think it's going to be a 2-7 matchup with the Nets and the Bucks. And then to your point, I think the Cavs and the Heat probably play that 1-8 matchup. I would love to see Trae Young in the playoffs again. I mean, Ice Trae in the playoffs without him, it feels criminal, but that's probably what's going to happen. But yeah, man, I think to your point, like earlier, I don't see the Nets intentionally doing that. I just think it would happen naturally.
So it's interesting you mentioned that, and I can hear Danny getting excited about getting to avoid, Brooklyn in the first round, first of all, as a Heat fan, but also the prospect of the Nets and the Bucks going up against each other and one of them knocking out the other. I think every other Eastern Conference team is definitely rooting for that scenario to hopefully, you know, make their path to the finals a little bit easier. Regardless, though, of what ends up happening, I do believe the Nets are going to advance. I think the Cavs right now, I mean, you touched on it with them losing to Brooklyn, they are, despite their great start to the season, they're 100% on upset alert to me. I'm actually predicting, Dan, that Atlanta is going to be the 8th seed coming out of the East personally. Cleveland has been playing their worst basketball at the worst possible time. Obviously, Evan Mobley did just make his comeback, so that is good news. But again, with the play-in tournament and the format, one game can easily knock you out. And obviously, them losing to Brooklyn, I could see them also losing to Atlanta. The Hawks have won 7 of their last 10. They're heating up at a great time. They've got big game experience from making the conference finals last year. And as you kind of touched on, Dan, they have Trae Young, who to me is the best player on any play-in team in the East outside of, you know, KD and Kyrie on Brooklyn. So to me, that's the biggest factor. That's why I have Atlanta beating both the Hornets and then again going to Cleveland and beating the Cavs on their home floor. That would lead us to, again, as I mentioned, Nets Bucks in the first round and Hawks Heat. So Miami versus Ice Trae, which again, I think Miami definitely prefers that matchup. But I think if you had it your best way, you'd definitely probably play Cleveland in the first round, Dan.
I think that we're also forgetting about a key pivotal player in this scenario, and it's Jared Allen. If Jared Allen can come back and play versus, because I think you and I are both aligned, they're probably going to lose to the Brooklyn Nets. But if Jared Allen can come back and play against the Hawks, it's game over, man. Like, I don't think that the Hawks, as currently constructed, can take down Allen, Mobley, Garland and the plethora of players that the Cavs have. But without Allen, I definitely see the Hawks making a good run. I mean, Allen is very underrated as a rim protector and overall defensive anchor. So I just think that he's the X factor, and it could go either way, unless we know he's playing. If he's playing, I think it's a wash. If he's not, I could still see Cleveland being competitive. So, you know, we'll see. I think that if he does play, it would be a very entertaining series with the Heat, assuming that they keep the 8th seed. And if he doesn't play, I think that for the most part, like TV ratings-wise, everyone would love to see Trey go down and try to take down the Heat. But competitive-wise, who knows? Like, either team is just they're both pretty even in terms of their power and like potential, in my opinion.
Yeah, you touched on Jared Allen. Obviously, his presence is definitely missed for Cleveland. They are definitely not as scary a team without him. From the latest that we have on Jarrett, he did go through a 15-minute workout on Friday before their game against Brooklyn. He is out for Sunday's game, so they're hopeful that he'll return. But again, there's no guarantee. And I mean, the longer it waits, the less chances that they're going to have to survive. So I think in order for them to beat Atlanta, they're probably going to need Jared Allen or at least some pretty big games from Mobley and from Garland. So we'll definitely see what ends up happening there. And obviously with the Hawks, their whole team kind of runs on Trae Young. If he could easily go off for 50 and win you that play-in game easily, that's the scary part with Trae. You know, that's he to me is the best player that's left. And to me, that when you have the best player on the roster, that tends to make a really big difference. You know, Dan?
Yeah, I agree. These games are going to be really interesting. But again, I think that the bigger point that we're missing is it's still possible that the Nets just come out and kind of fall on their butts in like that 7-8 seed matchup. It just is, right? Like they've been so wildly inconsistent with some games and then others. They haven't been throughout the entire season that anything could happen. That makes for great entertaining TV and just like basketball in general. So let's just wait and watch.
Yeah, and that's the exciting part with Brooklyn. So what I would like to see is whether or not if they do get through, what's going to happen in that Milwaukee series. I think that's what everybody's waiting for. What I will say, though, with Brooklyn, though, Dan, they have won their last three games. I think they are peaking at the right time. They're having Kyrie Irving finally back full time. Kind of helps them build that chemistry back up. Obviously, no Ben Simmons. If they had Ben Simmons fully healthy, this would be a completely different subject. But with the team as constructed, I still think they're going to give Milwaukee a run for their money.
Yeah. Let's wait and see. I think we're getting ahead of ourselves. We're assuming they're going to play Milwaukee. But let's just wait and see. And I quickly want to touch on the point. Ben Simmons isn't coming back this year, right?
Like, yeah, I don't feel too good about it.
Okay. I wanted to make sure we got that off the books. All right, guys. So again, play-in tournament basketball. It's going to be entertaining. That's basically going to eat up the entire week this week in terms of just NBA discussion. But we want to pivot over to a different subject, still NBA related, and that is the NBA MVP race. So as you guys are aware, this is kind of one of the more competitive MVP races we've seen in a while. You could easily make a case for the top five players going up and down. So I'm going to list the top five players off in no particular order right now. And then Brian's going to give us his thoughts, and then I'll give you guys my thoughts on just who we believe should be the MVP. So I think that the consensus top five players are the following. We have Luka Doncic, Devin Booker, Joel Embiid, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Nikola Jokic. Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is probably the top five. Again, in no particular order, who are you taking as your MVP for this year?
I know it's not an exciting pick, but to me, it's Nikola Jokic. I mean, the fact that I think the stat was 2,000 points, I think like 1,000 boards and 500 plus assists. I think it's incredible. It shows so much about the different statistics he's able to impact. The fact that he's done this whole season with no Michael Porter Jr., no Jamal Murray. I mean, what else can you say? I know it's not sexy to pick an MVP back-to-back, but when I see which player is the most valuable to his team, just based off how much he holds the ball, how can you not say Nikola Jokic? I know people are going to probably attack their record and why that's kind of like his biggest con, but to me, with Embiid, he obviously had James Harden join the team late. Philly has kind of cooled off a little bit here down the stretch. They're trying to figure things out a little bit. It's not like they dominated the East either. I believe they're the 5 seed right now. To me, I think Jokic to me was the most valuable, and Luka to me is actually a dark horse candidate. Obviously, Danny and I touched on this offline. This guy is a guy who's made an impact without having a true number two in Dallas. He's led them to a top 4 seed. To me, Luka Doncic has heavily been slept on, and he's had one of the best second halves of the season of any player in the league.
Great points, Brian. I can't disagree with the Luka argument. We've seen it come up a lot depending on the sports media personality that you listen to. The argument for Devin Booker, it's shameful that he's not even in the top 3 given Phoenix's dominating record and Booker's just overall consistency throughout the year. Again, we switch up the criteria for what we want MVP to be every year. The NBA definitely needs to take recognition of this problem and try to address it sooner rather than later, because it just causes way too much controversy. Or maybe they leave it as that because they like the controversy. I don't know, but ultimately, like, usually we try to give it to the best player on the best team. Now we're switching it up in order to kind of give it to the person with the best storyline. Like, it just it goes up and down way too often. My argument is against Nikola Jokic for 2 reasons. One, you brought up the record. I can't give it to a team in the bottom half of their conference, regardless of the circumstances, unless they do something that's just ridiculously historic. We did give it to Westbrook, which, you know, triple-double, that makes sense. Jokic did make history, but the problem with giving it to Jokic right now for me would be him having back-to-back MVPs. We're putting Jokic in the same conversation of some of the greatest NBA players of all time, which are, you know, LeBron, Steph Curry. We're talking about Larry Bird. I think Magic won it, possibly back-to-back. I can't remember. But, like, we're just putting him in that discussion right now. Giannis, obviously, like, I just don't know if I'm ready to put him there yet, along with the fact that their record just isn't at the level I would expect it to be at. I think that, for the most part, there's going to be voter fatigue against Giannis. And I think everyone can agree the Bucks are probably the most stacked team in the East in terms of just overall players taking over and schemes. So it just seems a little bit unfair, even though his stats are ridiculous. To me, it's Joel Embiid. He's dominated the entire year. And apart from them being the 4 seed right now, it's up in the air. They could finish 3rd or 4th. But with them being the 4 seed, I like this the whole storyline of him going up against an absent Ben Simmons and still carrying his team to a top seed in the East. And then when James Harden came over, like, guys, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but James Harden has been terrible by his standards since he got traded to the 76ers. He had a stretch of maybe 4 solid great games where we were like, man, this team's going to be nasty. And he's just fallen on his face ever since. But they're still competitive and they're still winning because of Embiid. And they traded away a bunch of their depth to get Harden. Like, people overlook the fact that Seth Curry and Drummond were traded in that trade. So that just put more of an onus on Embiid to take over, with Harden not performing at the level we expected him on. So again, it's just the narrative around giving Jokic back-to-back MVPs when I think there's candidates that are just at the same level he is. Embiid, it just to me makes the most sense.
I get it. I understand it. Look, the logic is there. The race is obviously very close. I personally have Jokic, again, purely on his individual numbers, on top of where would his team be without him, just based on how much he holds the ball. He's a playmaker for them. He obviously has averaged almost 14 rebounds a game this year. I mean, it's pretty disgusting what Jokic has done over the last couple of years, and it's a shame if voter fatigue affects it. Same with Giannis as well. I mean, there's no questioning his dominance. I actually looked up NBA.com's most recent MVP ladder, Dan. I was very surprised. Jokic is number one, Giannis is number two, and Embiid is number three. I actually felt like Embiid has kind of been the prohibitive favorite over the last, like, couple of weeks, even though it's been a tight race all in all. So I'm surprised to see Jokic and Giannis ahead of him. But personally, again, I'm pulling for Jokic. It would not surprise me at all that Embiid gets awarded MVP, though.
Yeah, I think that all these players are very well deserving, but I just with the Jokic argument, I reflect back on the Nash back-to-back MVPs. I think that we can all agree, for the most part, Shaq should have won the second MVP that Nash got, but again, the criteria changed that year. The Suns were the best team in the league, so they gave it to him. I think that, again, the criteria is the bigger discussion. People, like, the NBA needs to have more consistency on why they're awarding MVP on a year-to-year basis. But, you know, Nash got back-to-back MVPs, and he was the only player with back-to-back MVPs that didn't make the top 75 class. I'm not saying Jokic would be the same case, but he hasn't definitively taken over to the point where I'm like, man, he's going to be top 75 one day. Like, Giannis, we all know he's top 75. Jokic, I don't know if he's top 100. I think he could be, but I would have reservations on that given his record as well.
I think I'm a little more sold on Jokic than you are, Dan, for sure. Based off what I've seen from him, I think he is a player that is a force to be reckoned with. And I sometimes, because he plays for Denver and they're not as a super flashy team, I think a lot of folks haven't gotten good exposure to him. They've just seen his stats and stuff like that. I mean, this guy is a difference maker on the floor. I think he's going to be a top 100 player when they do the ceremony, for sure. But yeah, we'll end up seeing what ends up happening with that, Dan.
Regardless, I don't think anyone could be upset with who wins MVP. Yeah, yeah. They're like, any player would be deserving at this point.
Yeah, they're all pretty deserving. I'd agree. I mean, we can't sleep on Giannis either. Giannis, what he does every year is special. The Bucks are the 2 seed. It's just, again, to me, he also has the really perfect setup around him with Middleton and Holiday. You know, if it was just Middleton or just Holiday, that'd be one thing, but he has both of them with him. It's tough.
But I could see Giannis winning Defensive Player of the Year. That's a topic for a different conversation altogether. But he could easily take it this year again. Like, this guy has just been disgusting.
He's not
Rudy Gobert, so, like, you know, that makes
all Danny cares about. Now, Giannis could seriously add to his legacy with that one.
That just makes him a prohibitive favorite in my opinion. But I have my eyes set on another player winning Defensive Player of the Year, so we'll discuss that at a later date, probably next episode.
Oh boy, what a mess, Bam Adebayo. Just take your Tyler Hero Sixth Man of the Year and be content, Danny. That's all I ask.
Bam has a strong case. I don't care what anyone says. But
All right. We'll see how the Heat do in the playoff. You better pray you don't get Brooklyn in the first round. That's all I got to let you know.
And Brian, you said it yourself. 3-1. You know, we lost one game by 15 points, but we're back. You know, we're
helping. The one with both of them playing. You're right. That's the one you guys lost.
Hey, man, we'll just have to wait and see. I think offensively we would kill that team just because they don't have anyone to stop everyone. Like, it's that simple. Brooklyn's going to lose to whoever Brooklyn loses is because of the fact that they can't defend. It's that plain and simple.
Just make sure everybody, we take a little bit of this side of Danny with a bit of a grain of salt. He is wearing his Heat hat at this point in time as he discusses the
Miami Heat. I'm saying if Brooklyn were to go up against the Celtics, the Bucks, the Heat, I don't think they'd be able to go up against the Sixers. Sure, but like,
they're all tough matchups in their own respect.
They would just probably lose any of those series because they can't defend the other team. Like, it's that plain and simple. If they had Ben Simmons, totally different argument. I'm not going to dispute that because they have defensive presence. Right now, you cannot expect KD to guard 1 through 5 and also play 40 minutes and score. Nash's rotations are just awful. He requires way too much of these players, and I pray to God that KD or Kyrie don't get injured from playing 40-plus minutes at the end of the season. It's just ludicrous.
I agree. I wish if they were deeper, I'd feel better about their chances. If they had Ben Simmons, I'd feel better about their chances. But I definitely believe they're going to win those play-in games. And then, hey, at that point, it's 7-game series. You have KD and Kyrie. I mean, if they play all 7 games, I understand defense is going to play a factor. But those two are some of the most skilled offensive players out there. If you have both of them on the team, anything could happen in a series as far as I'm concerned. I would not sell them out at all.
All right, you're much more hopeful. I think you work with the people over at the sporting bet places, because I'm shocked that they're still so high up there in terms of just like odds. Everything, like, numerically, statistically speaking, everything speaks against this team making a deep playoff rush. Yet here they are still. So, like, clearly, I don't know what's happening. Like, I can't trust science or math anymore at this point. Like, I just can't.
Yeah, I think they struggle against Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee would beat them in a series, either 6 or 7 games, maybe even 5. No disrespect. But the other teams, I mean, even Boston, I don't think they match up well with Boston. I think they match up a little better with the Heat, though.
Yeah, I could agree with that. They don't have as many wings versus Boston.
Yeah.
But regardless, like I don't see this team making the conference finals. Like I don't get it.
That's why they play the games, Dan. That's why they play the games.
The games show me that they shouldn't make the conference finals. By that argument, like by your logic, everything's showing me they shouldn't.
You're right. But the crazy things happen in the playoffs. There's upsets. Like it can happen.
You know what?
Far-fetched.
I would believe the whole logic that there's upsets and anything could happen if they were being coached with competency. Right now, they're
not. That's a Steve Nash debate. Yeah, I get you. I'm not debating. I'm not arguing for Steve Nash. I'm just saying he has KD and Kyrie Irving. That's it.
I like Nash. I love him as a player. As a coach, he's been god awful. I'm sorry.
There you go. But I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying he has those two.
KD and Kyrie can't defend and score for 40 minutes straight. I don't care what for over a 7-game series. I don't care what anyone says. No, it's just not plausible.
Okay, and that's why. Thankfully, Kyrie's pretty rested. Thankfully, from this season, so hopefully he can.
I don't think you heard his last interview. He was like, "I'm kind of tired. I'm not used to playing 40 minutes."
Let me say, Dan, this is going to be a legacy series. Whoever they end up playing for Kyrie Irving. Because after this whole season, if they're not able to get out of the first round because he's rusty or he's, you know, doesn't have a shot. I mean, to me, if I'm Kevin Durant, I'm like, hey, dude, I played as many games as I could this year. You know, obviously barring injury, like I need you to, you know, pick up your slack when these games really matter. And obviously he can play in every game now.
I don't put the onus as much on Kyrie as I do the general front office and the coaching staff.
All right.
But again, discussion for another day. I'm definitely a lot more pro or player friendly than front office friendly compared to a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of like if the Celtics go up against the Raptors, there's a couple players that wouldn't be eligible to go like to participate.
I saw that. That would be very interesting. I mean, that would.
But, you know, we don't talk about those players. We only talk.
Yeah. Well, listen, if they end up playing, then I think we will.
Yeah, but you know, no one's gonna get as much hate as Kyrie got. It's just it's
a bullshit. You know, it comes with the fame. It comes with the money, right?
It's a bullshit narrative. We should hold Al Horford and Jaylen Brown or whoever the other players are to the same standard.
Yeah, no, hey, listen, I agree, but I think it'll be a story for sure.
I think so too.
Not as big.
Yeah, exactly. All right, guys. Well, that about wraps it up for this episode. We are going to be coming back at you guys next Saturday. So, you know, set your alarm clocks. Make sure to hit that follow notification on your streaming platform. That way you can get our takes on what happened with the play-in tournament, you know, what the final playoff potential or final playoff matchups are going to be moving forward, and just have more general discussion. Maybe we'll discuss the defensive player of the year by then. Brian, do you have any other parting words?
No, man. Thank you guys for listening so far. We're excited to preview the playoffs on Saturday for you. So make sure you're listening on that.
All right, guys, take it easy.